But first this hour to the aftermath of a contract gone wrong, big time, amidst the full public gaze, or is that public hysteria? Because the end of Melbourne's much-vaunted billion-dollar east-west road link has dominated proceedings in Victoria this week and has loomed large in the state's whole planning system since Liberal Premier Bolte flagged it back in 1969. After frantic last-minute negotiating this week, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews did make good on his election pledge to tear up the contract and to proceed with a big-ticket Metropolitan Rail project instead. Now, that decision, I'm sure you've heard, cost taxpayers around $340 million, so that figure is certainly debated. And the cancellation of the biggest government contract in recent Australian history, possibly ever, has the business community warning of reputational damage from increased sovereign risk, prompting some public wondering about broader implications for public-private partnerships, PPPs. Well, joining us to help dissect the issues and the likely consequences is John Dury, a business columnist with The Australian, who's out and about this morning, but he's on the line. Good morning, John.
Hi there, Geraldine. Good morning.
This has been hugely controversial at a state and federal public level, political level, not to mention the vigorous social media. We noticed a tweet from Prime Minister Abbott late in the week saying, on Hoddle Street, watching the traffic inbound the day after Victorian government pays $640 million plus not to build a road, you can't make this stuff up. That would seem right. You can't make this stuff up.
Well, that's very true. And I was at a function yesterday where Bruce Pilson, the small business minister, made a crack about the traffic too. I think we can expect the Liberals to be doing that for the next few years.
Could you recap briefly, for those of us who haven't been across the blow-by-blow coverage of it, how did we get to this point?
Well, just literally 3 weeks before the state election was called, the government signed up what's called a public-private partnership, which was going to commit the state's $10.7 billion for an east-west road link. Now, the project itself was controversial because Labor had opposed it in the run-up to the election. And also, a lot of the sort of so-called road experts, people like Sir Rod Eddington, who drafted the report for the previous government, had always said that this road link should be built from the west, and the east, it seems, was only added for political reasons because that happens to be the Liberal Party heartland in Melbourne. So it was a controversial road, and in my view, the problem was that these public-private partnerships are written in sort of one-size-fits-all when clearly this one wasn't.
Well, indeed, Crikey said yesterday, given the debt loadings and so on, if both sides of politics didn't have such an aversion to public debt, much of this east-west debacle could have been avoided. Is that a fair comment?
Well, look, I think it's a fair comment about debt. I mean, right now, governments can raise debt a lot cheaper than you and I can, but indeed you and I can raise debt pretty cheaply, and debt's fine so long as you can pay it back. That's of course always the issue for the state. The real problem here was that the previous government had signed up this partnership, and they went to, it was a real belt and braces signing of the contract for a contract, and these public-private partnerships are really quite a pernicious form of doing business, which front-loads all the commission so that all the people hanging around the project, they get their money miles before the public ever gets to see the benefits of the road.
Yeah, this was what really got you going yesterday, and you wrote very strongly about that. You know, these PPPs have featured strongly. Lendlease, very respectable company, was the consortium leader. First of all, are you able to clarify what is the ultimate cost of not going ahead with this likely to be before we get to this business of front loading?
Sure. Well, it would seem the ultimate cost is about $420 million. The government takes off a figure of $81 million, which is for there was $3 billion in debt, and they're the fees owing on the debt. And they're saying, well, we use the debt for something else. But I think that's really a little bit cute claiming that. And so the actual cost is $339 million, of which $160 million is to pay for the so-called design and construction part of the contract. And this is for the fact that if you need a tunnel, then you need a tunneling machine, so you've got to pay up to book these guys. I think that $160 million is about the only legitimate side of the payments too, because that was money you actually had to spend to book the equipment. The rest of it goes to investment bankers, superannuation funds who get things like there was equity owing, I think about $300 million in equity that was going to be payable, but that was going to be payable in a few years' time. But they're going to walk away with $10 million on underwriting for just because they said that they would commit equity. So you can see there's a whole lot of fees. And then Lendlease, they said the project was worth about $140 million to them because they were going to pick up fees for arranging the consortium. And there's a whole lot, which they collect. The problem with these public-private partnerships is the moment the document's signed, then the checks are handed over. And so this was money that was already gone. The Andrews government had no choice but to pay it.
Right. And so where do you think it leaves public-private partnerships?
Well, I think that it clearly shows that I think that they're a great idea. I think particularly in this day and age, in the sort of post-GFC, there's been a lot of rethinking about how big infrastructure projects should happen. I think quite clearly what should happen, especially now, is that governments ought to take a lot of the risk on up front because they can get the cheap debt, but then after that they transfer it to private ownership. Now, in a way, public-private partnerships do this in a sort of formulaic way. But I think what should happen is that we should sort of break the mold and just sort of tailor it for the project. This case in particular, what should have happened, we should have had what an old-fashioned break free, which happens in takeovers, where the government could have said, okay, well, we're going to commit to the project, but we're going to an election. So if it doesn't work out, then there will be X dollars paid, and that probably would have been a lot lower than the $339 million the government's talking about.
What's the talk around the CBDs? That you know, what are the lend leases and the multiplexes and so on thinking about all this?
Oh, well, they're obviously disappointed. They're not going to be getting more money than they're getting. But look, I think to be fair to the Andrews government, they paid the money that was due, and so I don't think anyone's really screaming blue. You know, I should correct that. Some people are screaming.
Some certainly are. Often the Murdoch group, I might add, your group.
Well, yeah, that's true. but there's sovereign risk and so forth. But I really think that's overplayed, and I think if there's a government contract tomorrow, Lendlease would be the first in the door to.
Oh, well, that is interesting.
To get hold of it.
And there were some extraordinary personalities, before I let you go, who loomed large in this. Could you give us some of the flavour of what was going on behind the scenes?
Well, if you'd personally said on the politics, the politics was that this was really very strong. The Andrews government did a comfort letter, which was another way of just sort of a belt and braces approach to the contract.
Some of the advisors too, like John Wiley and Leon Zwier and Lendlease's CEO Steve McCann.
We had John Wiley and Leon Zwier, who are two of the more prominent business advisors in Melbourne, if not Australia. Leon, of course, is a partner at Arnold Bloch Leiber, and John Wiley is just stepping aside from his day job at Lazard. John actually did this pro bono, interestingly enough, because in his words, he did it for Team Victoria. I think that there was a feeling among both of those two that the Victorian taxpayer was really being unfairly taken to the cleaners here. And so that's in part why they got involved. They are also two of the most skillful negotiators in this country. And so Daniel Andrews had some pretty impressive people on his side.
I just noticed the ACT sort of threatening to tear up an $800 million light rail project. But so, you know, we'll just see where this goes. But before I do say goodbye to you, next week we have this drama of the heads of the major banks fronting a Senate committee hearing on financial advice, the Sam Dastyari Show, I think we could call it.
Absolutely.
We had the ANZ announcing it would pay at least $30 million as to compensate 8,500 wealth management customers. What do you think we're going to get at that hearing?
I think we've probably got the news we're going to get. Now, I think that your description's perfect, the Sam Dastyari Show, because I really think that things have gone too far here. I think quite clearly the Senate, next week's Senate hearing has brought on the announcements this week, and ANZ wanted to get its the news out, ASIC wanted to get the news out, so everyone wanted to show so that they could show that they're doing something.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and so I think that there's a lot of politics there, but I think at the end of the day we're losing sight of who we're trying to protect here, which is, you know, the mum and dad investors who haven't been well treated in cases by the banks, and we've now every bank except for Westpac has admitted that they've let people down in wealth management. AMP sort of do likewise sort of quite regularly with, you know, it's not possible to run thousands of financial advisors and have everyone squeaky clean and do the right thing. And in my view, the system is actually working. We had the FOFA regulations, which were put in place by Mr. Dastyari's own party, of course, which one of the reforms was that the advisor's got to send you an annual statement which puts down your fees, what they did for you, what they said they'd do for you, and this is what tripped up ANZ, and that's quite an instructive document, because they've got to commit to paper what they actually did for you, which, of course, in many cases is nothing.
Will be very interesting. I personally applaud him for getting them all there, but I can't wait to see what it's like. Thank you, John Jury, very much for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
John Jury, the respected business columnist with The Australian, and that will be a story to watch this coming week.